This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Weather apocalypse Mageddon.
So a hurricane hit the Bahamas, and it's imminently threatening Florida. We expect to see some significant action on the state of Florida coming in later this evening, within the next few hours into the overnights. And so obviously everyone is talking about the impacts it's going to have on the state of Florida, the residents there and the residents in the Bahamas who have already had to suffer through the devastation of a hurricane that is moving very, very slowly. And the fact that it's moving so slowly means it's got even more time to do this kind of damage. But instead of talking about it in that regard, instead of talking about the people on the ground and the impact it's going to have on a whole bunch of lives, we've decided now to put a whole bunch of ideologues on TV and radio and allow them to use this, the suffering, to promote an agenda like Emory Professor Tiffany Yannick. She was on with Democracy Now!
These storms that are hitting the Caribbean with this intense magnitude are historic, unprecedented.
Okay, just real quick. They're not unprecedented. This is not unprecedented, nor is it historic, but please continue.
And these storms are man-made storms.
It's almost like a literal person put this all together with the intent of doing damage. Continue.
When I was growing up in the Caribbean, we would get really dangerous storms once a decade. And now we're beginning to see them regularly.
Okay, again, I don't mean to get in the way of her politicking here. What she's saying is demonstrably untrue. It's demonstrably untrue. I went back and I literally picked a random date. I went to 1950 because it sounded good. Just to see the quote-unquote serious hurricanes, they break it down according to the severity of. And so we were looking at what was just deemed serious hurricanes. We had more in 1950 than we did in 2018. Now, is that any sort of a causal relationship between... I have no idea. But this whole idea that, oh, you know, we used to only have them once in a blue moon, that's just not true. That's 100% not true. And when we allow that kind of thinking to go out there unchallenged, it starts to create a narrative that isn't necessarily rooted in facts. Now, if she's got a factual argument to make, she should use that data so we can do with it what we will. But something tells me when you put out this kind of false data, it kind of gets away from what she wants us to talk about, which is climate change. And I'm going to assume that she would at least acknowledge that if we're not having an honest conversation about climate change, no one's going to come to some sort of consensus the way that she wants to see it. If you've got the data on your side, and clearly climate change is real, but if you've got the data on your side, why not use it? Oh, because maybe that this isn't really about climate change. This is about going after capitalism. Oh, okay.
It's, as Dr. Campbell said, it is quite ironic and saddening that the people who are most vulnerable to these man-made storms are the ones who, in all cases, are not the contributing factors to the carbon emissions that are causing these storms.
Okay.
These storms are being caused in huge part because of capital. U.S. North American capital and
what?
Places like the Virgin Islands and the Bahamas are the ones that are most vulnerable to these things.
So I'm assuming she's talking about capitalism here. Okay, this is why, as an environmentalist myself, I care about the environment. I just don't subscribe to the crazy beliefs that someone like Tiffany Yannick subscribes to, because they're not really talking about the environment. They're talking about the economy. They're not talking about saving the environment. They're talking about dismantling capitalism. And that is a key reason why you're not going to see the left and the right come together with some sort of meaningful, good faith efforts to change some of our policies and some of our habits in a way that truly is going to make a difference. They're not trying to change it to save the environment. So I'm not going to jump on board with them. And by the way, they've also got a lot of their data wrong, at least as it relates to this particular hurricane and some of the hurricanes that we've seen. Roy Spencer is a meteorologist. He was on with Fox today.
The oceans are warming up. The atmosphere is warming up. I think probably, based on the theory, over 50% of that is due to humans. But the warming is very slow, and warm waters is only one part of hurricane formation, okay? In order to have a hurricane, most of the tropics, all the time during the summer, are capable of producing or supporting a major hurricane. What's usually missing...
Which, and by the way, again, remember, historically, this happens with great frequency. It doesn't happen every single day, but it didn't happen every decade. This happened every year.
Is a pre-existing disturbance. For instance, most of the hurricanes we get started out as African easterly waves that come off of Africa south of the Sahara Desert. That's where most of them come from, the disturbances. So you need that, but you even more important, you need low wind shear. So you've got these different ingredients you have to have. It's kind of like tornadoes. You know, you have to have a special mixture of certain ingredients. It's not just sea surface temperature. Otherwise, we'd be having major hurricanes all over the tropics, and we don't. They're a relatively rare phenomenon.
Now, you don't hear that coming from a lot of the progressives who are pushing for global climate change. Again, why are they talking about this? It has nothing to do with the environment. It has everything to do with capitalism. Now, at the same time, let's talk about what's going on the ground, because I think we're sending a little bit of mixed messages in the media. Just moments ago, Governor DeSantis was out there telling people, if you're in an evacuation zone in Florida, please, please, please listen to us. Leave. Pam Bondi, Florida Attorney General, made the exact same point also on Fox.
You know, Governor Scott, when he was governor and I was Attorney General, we lived through way too many of these, and I'm just hoping that people are heeding Governor DeSantis' warning and now Senator Scott's warnings to get out of Florida. It's not too late. Like Dan said, you know, stock up on your supplies if you're not leaving. And, you know, we all lived, Governor Scott and I, now Senator Scott and I, lived through Hurricane Michael, and you saw the utter devastation that that hurricane did to the panhandle. Yeah. And, you know, so many folks didn't want to get out of there. But if they're telling you to leave, your local sheriffs, your local police, you need to heed those warnings.
Okay, so on the one hand, we're saying, get out of Dodge. Leave. It is not safe for you to be there. On the other hand, we'll happily go and see reporters out in the field like this.
These are just the outer bands.
He's getting just completely demolished with winds, and he's not even at the worst part of it. And again, we're saying, leave. Except for the reporters who are needlessly standing right in the middle of it just so we can watch them get hit with waves or maybe, if we're lucky, a palm tree branch.
I have to realize, but it's scaring the officials, Sandra, because they worry people have thought that there is no danger. And that's—
you know what I'm seeing right now? There's no real danger because you're out there and you seem fine. I don't understand this.
Yeah, it's impressive. I mean, you know, he's
barely stand up.
That you played about 5 seconds of the clip. He's out there for like 3 minutes giving a report.
He's out there for hours. He's literally out there for hours doing this coverage while telling us it's not safe. So is it not safe and you're a hero? Or are they choosing to put you out there because it's not as unsafe as you're saying? You're sending two different messages. And then we wonder. And we do this all the time because no matter what, and this will happen tomorrow and the day after, we'll see some video that goes viral of some dorky surfer bro who decides to go out because now is the real great time to go surfing. And we'll say, don't do this, don't do this. But we'll make celebrities out of them because we'll put them on TV every single moment. The video will go viral. Everyone will talk about it. And then you've got Griff Jenkins over there doing exactly what he's telling us not to do.
Yeah,
although I will say I like some of the, like when the branch of a palm tree hits someone.
Are you not impressed by like his just will to report on the weather from the coast?
It's not will. He could literally do this anywhere. There's no reason to have anyone embedded. There's no reason to do it. We're not learning anything. We're already getting the footage coming from people who are directly impacted. You've got some of the flooding that took place in the Bahamas and you're seeing some of the video. It's horrible what people are going through. I don't need any reporter out there.
You could fly me out there.
No. I just wonder, are you not listening?
I'll be there.
No, but I don't want to send you there. Although, again, if you end up getting hit in the face with a palm tree branch, which we can, by the way, we can probably just arrange outside in our back parking lot. That's funny. I will say that. Griff Jenkins, who's, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but getting hit in the face with a palm tree, kind of that's funny. I mean, assuming he doesn't get seriously hurt. Like he doesn't lose an eye or something. Maybe he gets a little scratch. Now you can pretend like he's a war correspondent. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
In Bellevue, you'll find some tension on westbound I-90 from Eastgate as you head towards that 405 merge where fire trucks still blocking the right-hand lane from an earlier crash. southbound 405 busy in Bellevue due to an earlier incident, and then southbound 405 approaching the West Valley Highway right around South Center. We got the carpool lane blocked by a crash. Now, don't get stranded. Sign up for superhero service of AAA today, including up to 200 miles of towing. Call 800-JOIN-AAA or visit AAA.com. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
Hey, don't forget, at 5 o'clock today and every Tuesday before a Seahawks home game, we're going to give you an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to the Seahawks. We're going to give a Seahawks game. We're going to give you a keyword to enter online in our contest over at KTTH.com. So make a little alert or get the KTTH app. We'll be sending out an alert at 5 o'clock reminding you. With that in mind, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
New Seattle Seahawks defensive end Jadeveon Clowney has actually officially been through a practice, but a lot of people today are like, wait, how did he end up on the Seahawks? Joining me in studio from 710 ESPN Seattle, Jake Heaps. Let's talk about this, because the weekend news was we clearly got him for nothing.
Yes, that was the key in all of this, is I think there were a lot of rumors that were spreading around, Jason, about Jadeveon Clowney and his potential of his landing spots, because the Texans had been talking about, you know, wanting to trade him for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And over the last month, Jadeveon Clowney leaked out that he actually wanted to play for either Seattle or the Philadelphia Eagles. And initial reaction was, okay, that's great that a player wants to be here. What is the reality of that going to happen? Because the Texans, they needed some offensive help, and Seattle didn't have great depth on the offensive side of the ball. They weren't in a position where they could afford to give up a guard or a tackle or a receiver or running back that the Houston Texans were looking for. But when it was all said and done, Jason, what they actually traded for to get Jadeveon Clowney was absolutely in the Seahawks' favor. They traded away Barkevius Mingo, who was a great special teams player and linebacker for us last year, but in the addition of Michael Kendricks, KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, was really on the outside looking in this situation, was going to
superfluous for the team.
Yeah, eventually going to get cut. Then you trade away Jacob Martin along with that, who again was a nice pass rusher for this team, but was more of a prospect than anything else. They were hoping that he could turn into somebody special. And so you trade away him, and then you also trade away a third round pick. And the reason why that's a beautiful thing is because Jadeveon Clowney is essentially a one-year rental. There's no guarantee that you're going to have him on a long-term deal just for this season. And if he leaves and signs with someone else, then the Seahawks will get back a compensatory third-round pick. So essentially, they're not really giving up a third-rounder to the Houston Texans.
Okay, so then was Houston fooled, or was this just a bad move? That's what I guess I'm confused on.
This is the best part, and the reason why the Seahawks were able to get this done. Oh, and by the way, the Texans are paying for half of Jadeveon Clowney's salary this season. So
$16 million?
Yeah, $16 million. They paid $7 million of his signing bonus. So all the way around, the Seahawks walk away out of this the clear winner. And the reason why that was able to happen, Jason, was because Jadeveon Clowney had not signed his franchise tender. And what that means is the Jadeveon Clowney had to sign off on the team that he would eventually go to. So the Texans actually wanted to ship him off to the Miami Dolphins, and Jadeveon Clowney said, no, I'm only going to go to Seattle or Philadelphia. And so the Texans were really hamstrung in their options and eventually got to the point where they needed to get something instead of nothing. And the Seahawks capitalized on that in a big, big way.
He does sound a little bit like a pain in the ass. Is he? I mean, does he fit in, which would be kind of fitting into the locker room style of a lot of the players of the Seahawks? Does he come here quickly able to fit into the sort of the culture here?
Yeah, I think so. I think Pete Carroll has created a very unique culture. And one of the really cool things about this was his former teammate, left tackle Dwayne Brown, who's now on the Seahawks, was a huge part in Jadeveon Clowney becoming a Seahawk, recruiting him, telling him what this environment's like, what the city is like, what the 12s are like.
Sold him on the weather.
Exactly. I mean, and that actually, you laugh, but that was actually a big part of it.
I know, and that's kind of confusing to a lot of us who actually live here.
Yeah, well, if you did training camp in Houston, you would understand why you would want to move to Seattle. It's absolutely brutal. But with all those things being considered, I think Jadeveon Clowney is a guy who was a highly touted recruit, was a former first-round pick, and there's been questions about him in terms of his motor and things like that. Pete Carroll has thrived with players of that nature, getting the best out of their talent, and also getting a guy who is extremely motivated to perform at his best this year, because after this season, he's competing for an elite-level contract, a $20-plus million deal. So he has all the incentive in the world to have an unbelievable season.
To read analysis on this, head on over to 710sports.com. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to this weekend's opening match for the Seattle Seahawks at 5 o'clock. Stick around for that. We'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets. Jake Heaps from 710 ESPN Seattle, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, love being on. Thanks for having
me. Absolutely. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So this, I think, might be a record for the shortest lasting political rumor that actually was interesting and important in Washington State. So over the weekend, we learned that Dave Reichert, former congressman from Washington, saying, hey, actually, maybe I'm going to enter the race to run for governor. That was the rumor. We heard various reports suggesting that he or someone on his team was looking at polling data coming forward to see whether or not he wants to jump into the race. And it turns out it's not happening. No. He just put out a statement, according to Q13's Brandi Crews, saying, I'm honored and humbled to have recently been asked to consider running for governor in 2020. After much thoughtful prayer and discussion with family and friends, I've decided not to run. I'm enjoying my current role, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So this is a little bit disappointing, because I think when you're looking at who can beat Jay Inslee, despite the fact that I would argue that Inslee is very much a weakened candidate, having just run for president, showing that he doesn't really want the job, and he's now looking this as a consolation prize. I know a lot of Democrats who are in positions of power who are a little bit ticked off. You've got Hillary Franz who wanted to run, Bob Ferguson, Dale Constantine, all these people, they wanted to run, and now they're putting their political futures on hold, all because Jay Inslee couldn't get a job as the president. Now he's coming back here. So I wanted to see Dave Reichert run. Reichert has very, very high name recognition in this region. He is incredibly likable. Say what you will about his politics. And he's very much, I think, when you go back and look at his voting record and his statements, he was a moderate Republican. If he's going to be a Republican who actually gets somewhere in Washington State, you pretty much have to have his voting record. He's got a story. Everyone likes him. No one comes out and says, you know who's the biggest jerk I've ever met? Dave Reichert. No, everyone says Dave Reichert is one of the nicest guys. And I will say this. I don't know how old he is anymore. He's in his 60s, maybe early 70s. Dude is ripped. He came into the studio not long ago. Every woman and some of the dudes looking at him and going like, yeah, he's got it going.
It's impressive.
It's incredibly. And by the way, he knows it, which kind of makes me like him more, because he's wearing like a really tightly fitted shirt to show off his. The dude is legitimately ripped. And I think he wanted to do a push-up contest with someone. I can't remember who it was. And everyone was all like, no, you're going to win so easily. We're not going to embarrass ourselves. So I'm kind of disappointed that Dave Reichert's not going to run. I like Phil Fortunato, who has announced he's going to run, but he clearly doesn't have the name recognition of Dave Reichert. Drew Stokesbury is a sort of a moderate to conservative Republican who's got kind of name recognition mostly in this region, but not across the state. I'd love to see him step up. Obviously, Lauren Culp, who is the police chief over in the city of Republic, good dude, very much a conservative, but no one knows who he is outside of people listening to the show because he comes on so often. So Dave Reichert could have been a game changer in all of this and could have really made the whole race competitive. I want to see a competition on the Republican side. I 100% think that we grow as a party when we have healthy competition. Dave Reichert would have been able to provide that. So I'm a little bit bummed that he's not going to end up running. Let's quickly find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So there are two things in life that give me great joy. Number one, watching soccer. I love soccer. I love the Sounders. I'm a huge fan. But number two, and this is really what's most important, and thank God we've got a new producer on the show now that allows me, even if just for a couple of minutes, to talk about the Sounders, especially after they end up winning against the... Okay, what the hell? I clearly have time.
No, you don't.
You're a Sounders fan, and you're not letting me talk about it. You work for the Sounders.
You spent too much time talking about other sports, and now you don't get to do this sport.
Would you have allowed me to start the segment with the Sounders?
my higher-ups told me otherwise, so no.
Okay. And that's a fair point, because this is a political talk show, so I'm with you on that. I just wanted to squeeze in, like, 45 seconds to celebrate the win over the weekend against LA Galaxy. And by the way, this was one of those matches in a 4-3 win. This is a match that you can introduce someone who hates soccer, says it's really boring, and then they'll get all excited about the sport. You are a sellout, and I hate you. Why do you? I hired you because you had Sounders all over. You,
that's see, it? You're, not because of my skill
no!
and my wit?
Skill? This is your first radio job.
My beautiful radio face?
No, not at all. You put all the Sounders stuff on your resume. It was to fool me. It
kind
was to
of.
Fool.
It's a false front.
Oh, God, you're the worst. I thought producer Tom was the worst. No, no, no. Producer Peyton, even worse. Well, they won, so take that.
I'm glad they did.
Oh, yeah, you sure sound glad. Look at all the glee in your voice. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for sending us your text messages on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Over the weekend, we saw a mass shooting in Texas, and the shooter killed seven. He apparently went through a gun background check to purchase the quote-unquote AR-style gun that he ended up using, a term that doesn't really actually mean anything. It turns out that he did not buy the gun because it turned out that the gun background check actually worked. Now, he did end up going through a private sale. We don't know all of the details yet. And frankly, we don't know why he didn't pass the gun background check. I've seen two different reports. One we just heard at the top of the hour with Fox News suggesting that there was some kind of mental health issue. And yet over the weekend, we saw some story having to do with the fact that he had some kind of criminal background that might have prevented him from going through and purchasing the gun through a traditional means of just going to a gun store. Now, we look at this and then we try to figure out exactly, okay, what could have been done to prevent this from happening in that case, or prevent it from happening in the future. Now, there's some conversation about who this individual shooter was. According to a neighbor, Rocio Gutierrez, talking with the AP, called him a violent and aggressive person. He said, quote, "We were afraid of him because you could tell what kind of person he was just by looking at him. He was not nice. He was not friendly. He was not polite." Now, I don't know if that automatically means someone who's not friendly, not nice, not polite will become a mass shooter. But obviously, they're suggesting, at least in retrospect, that maybe there were some signs of what this guy was capable of. And look, a lot of perspectives change after we know someone did something awful and we go back and say, well, maybe we should have noticed or said something. I don't know necessarily if that's true, if that's fair even. But beyond that, for the most part, we're not really going to talk about the shooter, not in the media, and certainly not from politicians. They don't like talking about the individual who was responsible for the mass shooting. Instead, they like to say, oh, we're just trying to pass, quote unquote, common sense gun laws, which, of course, doesn't necessarily mean it's common sense. Now, in this case, it clearly wouldn't have helped. What have we heard? We've heard, of course, the new talking point now of criticizing anyone who offers thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers are not enough, I'm told. Okay, fine. And so then they say, well, what about universal background checks? The dude went through a background check. It didn't change anything. In fact, it worked the way it was supposed to, and yet he got his hands on a gun anyway. So maybe coming out of right after a mass shooting, don't present a bill, a quote-unquote solution, that has nothing to do with what happened in the first place. Maybe do something a little bit more. Maybe we should have an actual conversation, and this is for the left and the right, not simply say, now's the time to talk about mental health. Okay. Why wasn't it talked about? I keep hearing from both sides. This one is mostly coming from the right, not necessarily from the left. We need to talk about mental health. Okay, let's talk about mental health. Because all you're doing right now is saying it's time to talk about mental health without actually talking about mental health. And then on the left, of course, you say, oh, we got to get the guns out of people's hands. And then you got Beto O'Rourke, who's out there, who is riding high anytime there's a shooting in his state, because it gives some semblance of momentum to his stalling and dying presidential campaign. So he goes on TV, he goes on CNN, and he uses the F word. Oh, he dropped the F bomb. Not because of any sort of passion. It was scripted. And you know it's scripted because he tested out this line earlier in the day, and then right after getting off the air at CNN, lo and behold, on his website is a t-shirt that uses the exact same line. this was all scripted, and it's part of why his campaign isn't doing well. He's not authentic.
The rhetoric that we've used, the thoughts and prayers that you just referred to, it has done nothing to stop the epidemic of gun violence.
Just real quick, since he mentions gun violence there in the quote-unquote epidemic, gun violence is down overall. Gun violence in this country is down overall. You look at where it was, the height of it, in the 80s. We're considerably down from there. Now, he's about to tell you about how many mass shootings we have. He's using a stat that is completely incorrect. But what he doesn't say, and that's why I talk about mental health, is the vast majority, something like 66% or 60% of the gun violence that we see in this country is due to suicide. That feels like a large number that's worthy of a discussion beyond simply saying, let's confiscate guns.
To protect our kids, our families, our fellow Americans in public places, at a Walmart in El Paso where 22 were killed, in Sutherland Springs in a church, one or two a day all over this country, 100 killed daily in the United States of America. We're averaging about 300 mass shootings a year.
That's not true. That's not true. And the only way that they get to that number is by dramatically redefining what we mean by mass shooting. Now, we have a generally accepted term, at least from the government's perspective, of what a mass shooting is. You have to have a certain amount of people killed. They've decided that we're not only lowering that number, but we're not talking about deaths whatsoever.
No other country comes close. So, yes, this is f***ed up. And if we don't call it out for what it is, if we're not able to speak clearly, if we're not able to act decisively, then we will continue to have this kind of bloodshed in America. Uh-huh. And I cannot accept that.
Yeah, okay. You're a hero. Now, here's the deal. I will give him credit for something. And it's the same bit of credit. And this is not like a backhanded insult. The same credit I gave to Eric Swalwell, the congressman from California, when he was running for president. They're both being very open and honest about what it is they're talking about. They're being dishonest in the way that they approach the topic, but they're flat out saying they're going after your guns. And I can at least appreciate the honesty in that. I disagree with their approach, but at least I can appreciate that they're being honest in that, yeah, we literally are coming after your guns.
So let's speak clearly and bluntly and then take decisive action. Universal background checks, red flag laws, ending the sales of weapons of war.
But weapons of war are not actually being sold, just FYI.
But also importantly and politically difficult to say, buy those weapons of war back. Mandate that, not voluntary.
Just real quick again, sorry for interrupting him all the time. Buy them back. You didn't sell them. Beto O'Rourke didn't sell them. The federal government didn't sell them. We're not enjoying that right because you're just right now allowing us to. We enjoy that right because we have it. It's been given to us, granted to us by the Constitution. Don't tell me buy back. You're not buying back anything. You didn't spend any money or sell the item to us to begin with.
Or back. Mandate that, not voluntarily. Let's be really clear with our fellow Americans. No place for an AK-47 or an AR-15.
AK-47s, by the way, are almost impossible to purchase.
On the streets of our communities, nor should you be able to bring them into a church or a synagogue or a mosque or in public life as we're making it easy.
So, okay. He can go on and on and on. It's kind of ridiculous. He's not proposing anything. He's not proposing a single thing that would have prevented the shooting beyond simply saying, I'm going to just flat out ban all AR-15s or AR-style weapons. Again, a term that doesn't really mean anything. We like to throw these terms out mostly because it's being pushed by people who don't understand guns or gun culture. But this whole idea of fixating on the tool and not the person is weird to me. And it's weird to me beyond the context of the gun debate, because what happens in all other circumstances, let's talk about something that's happening locally. We've been talking a lot about addiction and homelessness. Sometimes they intertwine, sometimes they're separate. But what happens when we talk about, for example, someone who is addicted to heroin? We take a different approach than what Beto's doing right now, right? Progressives will say we need to focus on the addict. We need to focus on the addict, not what it is they're ingesting or injecting. We have to focus on the addict. We have to give them a space to easily consume heroin or any other drug of their choice. In fact, we'll put them in a quote-unquote safe consumption site because it's not about going after what it is that they're putting into their body that is slowly killing them, but we have to take a more approach that's focused on the person. When we talk about homelessness, what do we say? Stop criminalizing homelessness. Stop making it illegal for people just to survive. let's talk about it on a more one-on-one level. Let's gain the trust of the homeless person so that they will eventually take us up on our offers of resources. Why is it that when it comes to the homeless, when it comes to people living with a deadly addiction, do you say we need to focus on the person? But when it comes to a bad guy with a gun who arguably was dealing with mental health issues, and every day that goes by, we're seeing more and more evidence to suggest that that played a significant role in this, why are we talking about that person? Why aren't we talking about that specific issue impacting that particular person? Very simple. The folks who are out there, like Beto O'Rourke, they don't like guns. I get it. I understand why people don't like guns and why people are scared of them. I totally understand that. Guns can be incredibly scary. They're exploiting this for that one purpose, which is to take away guns. The same way when we've got a hurricane, you've got a whole bunch of people exploiting the topic of their concern of the environment as a means to simply go after capitalism. They're not going after any of what it is we're talking about. They're just using it to push a different political perspective. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. And by the way, we got a text from the 425. AR-15 is an abbreviation that stands for Armalite Rifle Model 15. Armalite is the company that designed the AR-15 platform. I like to throw that in every once in a while. Thank you so much from the wise texter at 425. Because there are a lot of people who keep saying AR means assault rifle. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And I don't understand what an assault weapon is in the context in which folks talk about it, other than scary looking gun. But if they're going to do the whole semi-automatic thing, makes you an automatic. Okay, well, then you're also talking about handguns. 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, at 5 o'clock, we're going to give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to this upcoming weekend's Seahawks home opener against that team with the Bengals. I know. What are you doing? That was just being dramatic to get
that
people
big
excited.
Grand build up.
You didn't need to tell me. I was just, it was the.
I'll shut up.
It was that. What was the team?
Bengals.
The Bengals. Yeah. So we're going to give a keyword at 5 o'clock or in the first 15 minutes of the 5 o'clock segment. And then you can just go on KTTH.com, enter the keyword for your chance to win. Every single Tuesday of a home game, we're going to give you an opportunity at 8 o'clock in the morning with Saul Spady, and then again at 5 o'clock with me. So you get two opportunities to win a pair of tickets to every single Seattle Seahawks home game this season. So stick around at 5 o'clock for your chance to win. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, they take private jets now and then, all while telling people the environment is declining thanks to carbon emissions coming from, you know, airplanes and whatnot. And so people call them out. They call them hypocrites. And now they're speaking out.
Occasionally, there needs to be an opportunity based on a unique circumstance to ensure that my family are safe.
I think that's reasonable. I think that's totally reasonable. There are times where sometimes you have to do things that you would prefer not to do because that is the only option. Cool. Fair enough. But given that that is a reality, is it possible for celebrities and other public figures, all the big newsmakers, to stop talking about global climate change in a way that's so urgent that it seems like you shouldn't ever, under any circumstance, do something like this? If we're literally just a few years away, about a decade away, as AOC likes to say, although science says that's not true whatsoever, but let's just go with that. If we're really about a decade or so away from the end of humanity, that we have until then to save the planet from ourselves, then there should not be any room for this kind of reasonable thinking. Right? What's more important? The existence of Earth? Or you getting to Amsterdam for a private speech with your wife and kid? Maybe don't go give the speech. Maybe telecommute. Maybe give the speech on Skype. There are ways that you can go ahead and do that without traveling in a way that is deeply, deeply, deeply harmful to the environment. We've been told over and over and over again, oh my God, you just used a straw? That's going to kill an orca. That plastic bag? Oh, my God. Do you know how bad that is for the environment? Yes, thank you. Okay, so we got to ban all these things. Fine. Then you need to start acting with the same sense of urgency that you're asking from all of us. I care about the environment. We talked about this a little bit earlier. I consider myself an environmentalist. I'm a proud supporter of the American Conservation Coalition. That's why Benji Backer, the founder of that organization, is on the show all the time. That is an organization that takes environmentalism from the perspective of a conservative, making the argument that this is why conservatives ought to be in favor of protecting the environment. And for the most part, everyone I know who's a conservative would consider themselves traditionally an environmentalist, because they have not allowed it to pervert the way they talk about this topic. We can ask everyone to care about the environment, be better stewards of our land, and ask them to make small changes in their habits that's going to have big impacts. Just don't lie to me. Don't make me feel bad because I used a plastic bag and reused it two or three times afterwards. Don't tell everybody that they're bad people who don't care about this environment if they don't change the habits that just so happen to also dismantle capitalism. The reason why I will never get involved with any of the quote-unquote mainstream progressive environmentalist groups, even though in theory you would think we would have something in common as simply as saying we care about the environment, is because that's not what this is about. When all of your solutions just happen to be about going after greedy corporations, you're kind of pushing away potential allies. Is there anyone out there who legitimately would disagree with just a basic sentiment of we should protect the environment? I think regardless of whether or not you identify as a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or a socialist, I think we could all get on board that, right? I don't like that our parks are covered in litter. It drives me absolutely nuts. Okay, so we're already starting at a place of agreement. Why from there then pivot into the crazy, like we need to go after all the evil corporations, that we need to dismantle capitalism because of what it's doing? Can't we find some sort of common ground that isn't totally crazy? And maybe, yes, that includes banning plastic bags, but maybe do it not based on the data of a 9-year-old girl who decided to look into this, and now we're pretending that that's basic science. Let's not pretend that we've got a significant portion of our oceans being consumed by plastics. We do not. That, again, is a made-up thing. Now, I may still agree with you that something needs to be done. I just don't like it getting pushed on me. And I certainly don't like it coming from people who don't at least practice what they preach as it relates to the urgency. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text. By the way, did you know that I'm on Instagram? You can go behind the scenes of the show. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz. Give me a follow. And I'll take you on a tour of the studio.